This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at REACH 2015, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 19 and 20, 2015.
Good afternoon and welcome to your last workshop of the day. Roseanne Bauman is here to speak to us about medical ethics. She is currently teaching at Community College in Ontario. She's a nurse, and she enjoys cultures and has spent a lot of time with international students in the last year. So please give your attention to Roseanne.
Thank you, Deborah. My apologies to those of you who are wondering about the discrepancy between the intro that you saw on the paper when you signed up and what she just said. This is how it went. I had to get an intro in for this in September when I had a full slate of brand new courses to teach, and so my attention was somewhat on my immediate tasks. And I was thinking general ethics, so I handed in the intro. Realized when I went through my things later again that, oh, it's supposed to be part of the medical series. So we're going to talk about ethics, general ethical principles. The case studies we're using are medical, but we can try to split them up so that the ones for non-medical people involve no medical knowledge. Will that work for you? We kind of discuss ethics and not having to have too much medical knowledge involved. And if you're totally in the wrong place, I will not be offended if you want to leave at this moment. That works too. So, welcome to those of you who are here. Ethics is one of those things that you cannot do in 40 minutes in a workshop. So I had to pick some sort of small focus. I think probably what I would say the focus of this workshop is to raise awareness of how we make ethical decisions and how that impacts when we're working with people whose worldviews are different from ours, whose cultures are different from ours, and how they make decisions. So in its simplest form, ethics is the question in any given situation of what should we do? What's the right thing to do? And how do we make that decision? I'm not a philosophy major, and you didn't come here to hear that. Very, very simply put, we can make decisions about what to do based on principles. We hold a value, and we make decisions based on that value. For example, we are currently in Canada in discussion about making doctor-assisted suicide available to the citizens of Ontario. For those of us who are Christians, who believe that life is sacred and that God gives life and God takes life, we may make decisions about that based on that principle. Life is God's to give or to take, so no doctor-assisted suicide. We've made the decision based on a principle. You can also make decisions based on consequences. What will be the outcome of this decision when I make it? One example might be if you legislate that all children must receive certain immunizations before they go to school. Now, immunizations carry risks. They're not entirely innocuous. But we decide that there would be more good for more people if everyone was immunized. The little bit of discomfort with the immunization, the odd bad outcome is outweighed by the amount of good we might do. So we've made a decision based on outcome, consequence. More recently, we're reading more literature where decisions are made based on relationship among the people involved. So instead of just being interested about who might all benefit from this, or instead of just being interested in what my principles are, I might be interested in the relationship. And I might make a decision based on what's best for that relationship. How many of you were in, I'm so terrible with names, Raymond Burkholder's session on making disciples of all nations? When he talked about sometimes the relationship's more important than being right? You can use that a little bit in ethics as well if you want. Most of us who profess Christ's name, who are followers of Jesus, believe that the Bible is our guide in decision-making, correct? A number of you would agree with that? So the principles laid out in the Bible are the things we go by. You may have seen this one. God said it, I believe it, that settles it. We've done our ethics, we can all go home. Not always that simple, is it? Particularly not when cultures vary. And as Raymond so emphatically told us, some of us go across the ocean and work in other cultures. Some of us have all those cultures on our doorstep. We can't say that we don't need to understand culture because we're living in North America. I credit this example to David Livermore, who does a series of lectures on cultural competence. It's a fascinating example of how we read the Bible, how we interpret life from our background. How many of you know the story of the prodigal son in Luke 15? You know the prodigal son. He leaves his father's home. He goes out, lives his life. He ends up in a field feeding swine, perishing with hunger. There's a group of people studying culture who went around to different places in the world and asked pastors, how did he end up there? What brought him there? Now, I'm going to ask you, is anybody brave enough? What brought about the circumstance? How did he end up in the field feeding the swine and perishing with hunger? Do you remember the story?
Well, swindling his money away.
Okay, he spent all his money, right? He, I think King James says, wasted? Mm-hmm. Wasted his substance with riotous living. You are living in North America. Have you lived in North America all your life? No?
Just for 70 years.
70. Where did you live before?
In Russia.
Russia. Interesting. I would have had to pick the one person who wasn't in North America all your life. You must have been trained by North American thinkers. A lot of Eastern Europe, North Americans, interpret that story based on a background of individualism, competitiveness, a doing culture. And we say, he wasted his substance. This could have been prevented had he saved some money, had he not wasted his substance. When they ask this question, in some areas of the world with harsh climates, a long existence of nomadic living, moving from place to place as the animals needed more food and so on, places where many kingdoms have come and gone. Those people said the problem was an unforeseen circumstance occurred. There was a famine in the land. Interesting, huh? When they ask this question, in places in the world that are highly collectivist, where the group is more important than the individual, where I make decisions on what is good for the group, not just for me personally, there, they said this was a social problem. No one gave him anything to eat. All of those are very close to one another in Luke 15. When you read the story of the prodigal son next time, all of those are views that could be taken of that story. And the difference lies in your cultural experience, your worldview, the way that you look at things. I raise that as a background. Culture and ethics are inextricably bound to each other. Culture provides the moral presuppositions, those ideas we don't even know we have, but they're part of who we are. Culture provides those to us. And ethics is the formal normative framework for our moral choices. So we make ethical choices based, at least in part, on our worldview, our cultural framework. What I'm going to do is break you up into groups to work on a case study, and I'm asking you to think about several things in your small group. You're going to look at the scenario and decide, and don't spend too much time on this, what's the right thing to do? What pops into your mind? What's the right thing to do? Then I want you to spend some time thinking about what are the values you hold that make you say that. Then I want you to think about whether there's a biblical basis for the way you made the decision. Can you support it biblically? So, how many people do I have in here who are actually medical people or interested in medical ideas? Could you raise your hands, please? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, let's create two groups of the people who are medical or have a medical interest, and let's move them up into this area. Two groups, you can sort of evenly divide, and I'm going to get you to work on case one. The people, how many people do I have left? I'll bring my medical group sort of up here. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4. Could I get you to move up, please, ladies? And then I'm going to create another group, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Let's have both of these groups work on case two. Feel free to ignore the sort of medical pieces of it, and what I'm getting at is what should this doctor do in terms of consent? Are these ladies part of one of these groups or not? You raise your hand. So you folks back here, again, sort of skip over the medical pieces, and what you're looking at is the issue of truth-telling.
Which piece? Sorry.
And Rita, you're doing case three, and look at the issue of truth-telling. Feel free to... Okay, I'm used to groups who talk all the time and I can't be heard, so feel free. Go ahead and have some discussion. You're going to get 10 minutes max to figure this out so that you can then discuss it. Okay, can I please call your attention back? You can stay where you are if you like, so move around. We'd like to hear from each other as to what's been going on. If you're feeling a little frustrated, that's okay. One of my recent students is in the room and she will tell you that I do this all the time. Ethics is like that. In order to understand an ethical dilemma, you need to be given one. You need to feel the tension of what it really is. I'm going to turn your attention, first of all, to case two. You all have a copy of it. And we had several groups who nobly worked away at it. Just quickly read over it so that your attention is here. You are an ophthalmologist on a 2-week surgical tour in Ghana. A 6-year-old boy is brought to you who acquired a penetrating injury to his eye several weeks ago. The surgery required will be involved. The equipment and environment are less than ideal, as in you're working in a schoolhouse with window lighting, nothing, sterile kind of thing. You recognize that doing nothing carries a high risk of permanent blindness in the injured eye and possibly eventually the other eye as well. However, the surgery carries risk of causing blindness also and additional complications if an infection ensues. The boy has thus far been treated by the local healer who is held in high regard by the community. You have come to recognize from your exposure to the culture that skill and wisdom are equated with confidence and action. Attempting to explain the risks of the procedure and obtain informed consent may be perceived as a lack of confidence on your part, as in if he's asking consent, he probably doesn't think it's going to turn out well. And that might destroy the fragile bond of trust in the honored foreigner who has unproven skills in this place. The what should you do? And does any of the groups on the side room care to comment? Did you reach an agreement amongst yourselves?
Well, I floated one, but I don't know if I got agreement.
Okay.
I offended, cut it out, cast it from you. That'd be decisive and...
So you think he should go ahead without asking for consent, yeah. Precisely. Any other comments?
Some in our group felt it would be deceptive not to let them know some risks.
Okay, you felt like it would be deceptive not to give them an option, at least, or communicate that things could go bad.
Yes. Yeah, I would respond that the fact that they've already went to the healer, there's some reason why 2 weeks after the healer did whatever procedure he did, they now are coming to this person. So they already understand that there are risks. This didn't just happen. It said, I mean, we already been treated. Obviously, something has happened these last 2 weeks.
Possibly the surgical team only arrived now.
Well,
this is a traveling surgical team.
Something's not satisfactory in the 2 weeks.
Okay, so something hasn't healed yet.
So they would understand that there are risks.
Okay. Any vote from the group at the front? Sometimes I don't give right answers to my students in certain situations. You have to assess the situation and the people involved. What I'm interested in hearing from you is what are the cultural values that influence your decision? The people who said they should at least have some idea of the risks. What cultural value are you drawing on?
It's just how we're used to in our culture to get everything explained to us.
You must have an explanation. You must be informed. Mm-hmm. Anyone in the room, what cultural values are we drawing on? Correct.
Seeing with one eye is better than not seeing at all.
Okay. He's drawing on that vision is very important.
Right. I think I question what you mean by informed consent. Because if you mean signing a paper saying, you know, there's no risk or that there's no liability and that kind of thing, that feels really American to me. Mm-hmm. And it also feels American maybe to dialogue about the risk, but that feels different to me. In some way. That feels more respectful, more... Do you follow the difference?
I think I do, and this comes from a larger case study, so there's probably more in my head than what I was communicating on paper. I think the deal was if the conversation occurs at all, okay. You run the risk of appearing incompetent, mm-hmm. unconfident. But you're right. We hold very strongly in our part of the world the value that you shouldn't do anything. Individualistic. We decide what happens to our bodies. No one should do anything without telling us about it and giving consent and so on. That strongly drives how we look at this. Okay? Very strongly. Anything else that came to mind that that drives our response to it? What about children having a right to grow up with their vision intact? We might feel that a little more strongly than sympathy for the healer.
Yeah.
who's continuing to treat. When you look at, we didn't talk about ethical values specifically, but doing good and doing no harm. See, there was risk either way. If you did nothing, he might go blind. If you do the surgery, he might go blind. Mm-hmm. Which way do we lean? Do the surgery in case, right? Because there's a chance you could do some good. Yeah. We believe in surgeries in North America. We believe in their ability to fix things.
Mm-hmm. Is that also cultural?
It probably is based on the success rates we have here, right? If you were in a country where people with surgery normally die, you probably wouldn't feel so strongly about pushing people into surgery. Now, the big question that the purpose of this session, did you think of any Bible verses that would lead you to believe that informed consent should be gained before procedures or anything like that? Did you have any strong biblical direction? Not sure.
Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I would not consent, so. That's my culture.
That's your culture, because what if the little boy's parents would want you not to ask for consent? And then, I've thought about that a lot, honestly. How do you apply the golden rule mm-hmm. when what they want is very different from what you want? Mm-hmm. It's a bit of a conundrum, because doing what I want may not in fact be loving in this situation. Mm-hmm. Let's leave that one sit for a moment and move on to case 3, where they were working at I'm just going to sort of broadly interpret this one. You're a nurse in a U.S. hospital, so you are in North America this time, practicing under North American standards. You're patient today is a young female who's recently arrived from Afghanistan. For the non-medical people, there's problems with the pregnancy. The baby appears to be deformed, disfigured, has some sort of problems. The doctor communicated this to the husband and recommended an abortion. The husband spoke to his mother about this. Not his wife, who's the patient. He spoke to his mother. So the husband and the mother-in-law have this information, and the mother-in-law says, oh no, we're not gonna tell her, inshallah. We're gonna wait on the will of Allah. However, you're caring for the young woman, and she seems to be asking about the baby. Is the baby okay? So, this is the issue of truth-telling. Any comments? What did you decide we should do?
Well, we decided we cannot lie to her.
You cannot lie to her because of what cultural principles?
Because of the men, well, we based that decision on what the Bible would say about telling the truth.
Okay, so the Bible says tell the truth, so you can't lie to her. Can you withhold truth from her? He answered the first question so that he didn't have to answer the second one. Can you be evasive with her when she's asking about the baby? Can you be evasive and sort of... I have people up here who can't wait. Can we ask them? Some of these people may have actually done this already. What would you say? Anybody who was chatting up here, you care?
I would probably say we don't know for sure. So that tells her that there's maybe a problem.
Okay. So you're going to try to walk a middle line here.
At that moment, I would.
Okay.
Maybe later, I would. But that would probably be all she needed to handle right then, I think.
Okay. Any other comments?
I would encourage her to ask her family.
Okay.
To keep dialogue with her family.
Encourage her to.
I would then try to dialogue with the family to get them to. Although I know this is very true in many cultures.
And I asked this question back here. I said, would you go speak to that husband? Or how would you, knowing the culture, what would be the most effective way to speak to the family? Anyway, someone else was going to say something else back here. I don't want
to. Yeah. I was just going to say, the interesting thing is, because I agree with the outcome, which is to not abort,
mm-hmm.
I'm more inclined to keep quiet in this case, even though it doesn't seem fair to the wife.
You're inclined to let them wait on the will of Allah.
Right.
And
whereas if I thought they were going to do something that I disagreed with, I might try to fill the wife in to see if she can protest.
And thank you. We are all human. We are all guided at times by our own beliefs. And we are tempted to let those lead us where we're going. I'm not going to put out there exactly what the right answer is. You need to be aware that also if she's recently from Afghanistan, and they're talking about the will of Allah, assumption is Muslim. And in some of those places, there is the value that you do not tell ill people how ill they are, because that will make them worse. You protect them from the truth. That way, I've had students tell me that and insist on it no matter what I said. The person will live longer if you don't tell them the truth. Okay, we have a cultural conundrum.
Yeah.
At that point, I become sort of silent and whatever. So, cultural values, you talked about truth. Was there anything else that came up in your cultural values that influence how you look at this? I think informed decision-making again. In North American culture, the mother should decide about that abortion, correct?
Mm-hmm.
It's her body. And she can't make an informed decision if she doesn't even know the truth. So that would be a cultural value that would play into that. Also, of course, not our own, but also our cultural values about using abortion as an option. That a fetus is not life also plays into that. Now, you already told me that the Bible says, do not lie. Does the Bible say, love your neighbor? How do you love that family and honor their position? How do you love the mother-in-law and the husband who don't want you to tell her?
I think in contrast to that, we have the idea that people have the right to know things,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's I'm not sure how broad a philosophy that is around the world, but I think that would contrast to, they have the right to know, you delay in on the opposite side, but we need to be respectful of their values.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Is there a way to get around that whole thing, your obligation to get informed consent, to tell the truth, and their insistence that the person not know the truth? Sometimes we do this thing where, if that's a strong cultural value, your patient probably holds that same value, if it's strong enough, if it's cultural, where you can say to her, who makes decisions? If there's something going on, who do we communicate with? Who makes decisions? She may tell you to communicate with the husband and the mother-in-law. If she does, you're good to go, because you have her informed consent to do that, right? I like the idea of trying to speak to the family. It would probably be best if you had an interpreter. I don't think I mentioned that. The command of English in the family was variable. It would probably be good to have an actual translator work on this
mm-hmm.
with her and with the family. Because you're not, Raymond talked about that a bit more than I was planning to. You're never certain what a translator has said. They're never certain what they understood of what you said if the English is weak. So it's probably a good time to draw in a person familiar with the culture and the language and try to work that out. Love to have more discussion, but we're sort of moving along here. The people at the front, I purposely gave them this one, knowing it would sort of put them in a spot. I've lost my case one somewhere in my shuffle. Case four, which we didn't do today, if you're interested, the question is about reporting child abuse when a cultural practice has resulted in something we would see as abusive. Okay, case one. You are working as a mission midwife in a remote area in Sudan. A mother brings her eight-year-old daughter to you, requesting that you perform the closing up procedure for her daughter. For those of you totally unfamiliar with this, and because of the children in the room, let's just say it's female circumcision. She says several young girls have died recently when the procedure was performed by the local gypsy woman, so she believes it would be safer to have you do it. You're aware that this practice has been in this part of the world for millennia. The mother's likely going to do it with or without your assistance. You've also seen firsthand the effects of this traditional method on adult women. What do you do?
That's a really tough one.
That's a really tough one. I don't know if anybody stuck their neck out and actually answered it. Did you? This group told me they were stuck. Did you reach a consensus? Did you? No? This group? Did you tackle it? Yeah, what did you say?
We decided not to.
We decided not to.
Refuse, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you're refusing based on what values of yours?
Well, it's God created us, male and female, created them.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, to populate the earth and so forth. Of course, this is to try and prevent fornication before marriages happen. At least that's one of the reasons.
Sometimes, yeah.
And so we do not feel like that would be the appropriate thing to do this, and then causing all the after effects, the effects of the traditional method of adult women in your care, knowing the trauma that it causes to them. Don't feel like we could do that. But you would have to have, it would be an opportunity to try and teach them why not,
mm-hmm.
and to try and, especially the mother, of course, the child wouldn't know much, but like one of them said, to get all the women together and tell them about this. Mm-hmm. It might be tough in that culture, however, because part of the men are the ones that do things, in charge of things.
Mm-hmm.
So biblical things would be, promotes a proper marital relationship if this procedure is not done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not to prevent fornicating type, immorality anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I have to point that out to them.
And in some places in the world, it's an issue of beauty. I know, we're North American. That women would have this procedure done because they see it as a mark of beauty. A little harder to tackle.
Is it like in China they would bind up the feet?
Like they bind feet in China, yeah. It's considered a mark of beauty and can be more difficult to, this is a difficult one. Drawing the community together, addressing it, hopefully you have a good relationship.
You'd have to have a really good relationship with that community.
We were even saying that, maybe we can't save this eight-year-old girl, but maybe we can save future generations
maybe.
And start the training process.
Because you're correct, she probably will leave your office and go and do it.
But at least you would have a seed of thought.
You planted a thought.
Mm-hmm.
This issue of changing culture, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You can't do it by just legislating. I mean, most of the world is trying to legislate female circumcision out of the world. But it's hard to change a culture that way.
Mm-hmm.
So coming back to this group was able to come up with a biblical basis for not practicing the procedure. Some of the other things we talked about, we were having a bit of a harder time actually nailing it down really clearly, biblically. Remember when we said, the Bible said it, I believe it, that settles it? Sometimes ethics is not quite that straightforward. Hopefully this exercise helped you think again, raising awareness how strongly cultural we are in our responses to things, in the ways we make decisions. Very deeply a part of us. in terms of Bible verses, to sort of wrap this up, one that came to my mind was, when you're working with ethics, when you're working with culture, listening is a very good thing. You need to understand what it is you're working with. And I think most of you spent the majority of your discussion time doing exactly that, trying to figure out exactly what you're working with. Be swift to hear and slow to speak is one of the biggest gems I can give you. When you're working with a culture other than your own, I should have learned this by now. Every class I have has students who are first generation Canadian or second generation Canadian or both. The past year, I had the amazing privilege of teaching classes that were 100% doctors and nurses trained in other places in the world whose credentials were not acceptable in my country. And so we were giving them a shortened nursing program so that they could at least begin to do something other than driving taxis and working at McDonald's and things like that. My last class was 25 people who had been trained in 18 different countries. Among us, we spoke 30 languages. Can you imagine trying to figure out how to do nursing with that many ideas? And you know, 50% of them were male, were doctors from countries where women don't teach men. It is an extremely humbling experience when you are the only person in the room who thinks something is a good idea. And they're challenging it, and you're standing there thinking, well, which part of me made, why did that make sense to me before? It's very interesting. You learn a lot when you listen. And you know what? They listen to you better when they know that you have listened and heard and understood. I tell you, the day we were trying to make beds, I just about, anyway. They don't know what a sheet is, let alone why you need 3 or 4 or 5, and why it's so important to put them on the bed properly. So lots of interesting things. I did put the golden rule up, because I do believe in it, but as mentioned earlier, I do it with caution in terms of cultural interpretation. Maybe it, in that case, should read, do as the person would have you do to them, as long as it's biblically correct. Now, I had put on the intro to the workshop, bring your own gems, and I'm opening it up to you. Do you have little pearls of wisdom, things that you have learned in ethical dilemmas, in working with cultures, and so on? Some of you probably have better stories than I do, and we didn't have time to get to them all.
Well, it's definitely a challenge for me. Like you said, you know, coming from a different culture, there's always this thing inside that my culture is better, and my way of doing it is better, and these dumb Americans, they don't know what they're doing and what they're thinking.
Yeah.
I've had to, even though I was young when I came, I was 11, I still had to humble myself and recognize, come to a point that, you know, Americans have a lot of wisdom and a lot of insight in a lot of things, you know, in comparison to Russians, mm-hmm. for example.
But not everything Americans do is right either, so.
Right.
We're
so. Right, but it was still, it's good, you know, yeah. It's good for me to come down from that, whatever,
yeah.
high, you know, and I can just really understand how important it is for us to do that to other cultures as well.
Mm-hmm. To remember that our way is not the only way.
Yeah,
and
to come down to their level.
Thank you. Someone back here was going to make a real quick comment.
I was thinking about cultures, you know, we even have our cultures. For instance, there's a hospital, mm-hmm. local hospital in our area that they have a procedure for the youngest, that mm-hmm. they go to men, they talk to the men, no woman will make her own decision. With anything regarding her child, with herself, mm-hmm. her husband. Which is kind of, you know, you think about mother culture, you think about nurses and
others.
So I, you know, when I read it, I saw that my mother was in nursing school. Wow. Yeah, actually have this written in their policy, how they handle to speak. And so they were actually going kind of for that,
and they're in a much better position to work with Muslim groups and so on too, because they have that.
So there is something to that, especially in the medical field, that you do need to know.
You do need to know some things
how
though.
To approach people. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
She's telling me I'm out of time. One last pearl that is totally opposite from everything else I told you. Never assume that everyone from the same culture wants the same thing. Blessings.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.